Executive producer Amanda Armstrong joins me now to take us through your feedback. So what have been some of the reactions this week to the program?
Well, here's something from a couple of stories today, Jane. From Carly, talking about shoes. No bad shoes here, says Carly. Comfort in Uggies, in praise of the Ugg boot. She also says, I'm a single mum who hasn't gone down the relationship centre or mediation path, but unfortunately, due to distance issues, there isn't an equal role, but we have arranged as best we can. My son has a good relationship with his father, regardless of the less than 50% care, and when he's older, hopefully technology will play a crucial role in his relationship with his father. So thanks, Carly, for that bit of quick feedback today. And on Friday, we talked about the black sheep of the family. Those of us who don't quite fit in or feel like we're the odd one out in our families. And there seems we have many black sheep amongst our listeners, although perhaps of slightly different shades. Here's one caller.
Hello, I'm just listening to Life Matters this morning and listening to Anne's story about being the black sheep. And my story is almost identical, and it was amazing to listen to Anne speaking because it was almost identical to my story. I feel very sad that my family have chosen not to include me in their life, but I've realised that I can move on with my life, and I'm sad for them, but, you know, it's my life too. And sometimes there is an evolution in isolation, and I think that I have grown tremendously through understanding what was happening. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And Pamela also wrote in, and she told us why she too is a black sheep. I'm the only Green voter in a highly ultra-conservative nationalist family. My father is extremely patriotic and Catholic, who spent his whole life in the army. I once told him he's lucky I was born the only female in the family because I would have been a conscientious objector if I'd been called up during the Vietnam War era. That didn't go down too well. I haven't told him that I'm an atheist now, but at his age, it's probably best that I don't. My family are all ravenous carnivores, and I'm the only vegetarian. They drive gas guzzlers while I mostly walk or use public transport. They don't believe in psychologists. I'm seeing one just to get over having been raised in such a family. Perhaps there was a mix-up at the hospital and they were given the wrong baby. How much more black sheep can you get than that? Thank you, Pamela.
Indeed, I think she makes a strong point. But Laurie disagrees with the idea that our nation may have been built on black sheep. She says, in this week of NAIDOC, which was last week, of course, when the program ran, I was positively startled to hear an argument that the original Australians were all convicts. There goes 60,000 years or so of Aboriginal settlement. Ross also questions this, but for different reasons. He says, your assertion that we all derive from black sheep convicts is largely true for the East Coasters, but South Australia was settled by free men and women, not prisoners. That said, one of my ancestors was a remittance man who was banished to Australia with a stack of money, which he used to buy a chunk of suburban Adelaide and then sell it off one block at a time to pour the proceeds down his gullet. Black indeed.
And then Rosalie left us a comment about what it's like when you begin to notice a bit of black sheep developing in your own kids. I've been watching one of my kids grow a black layer for years now, but I can also see the other working at creating the she's weird, not like me label as well. Sometimes all of them are weird. Their success, at least on the outside, can be won at the cost of family connection and care, and frankly, good health and humour. Quite often, I think. Thanks again, and here's to celebrating a good range of colour and texture in all our lives. Yes, here.
G'day, Glenn here. I listened with some fascination to your segment with Stuart Brown on Play. I'm a muso by trade, and it reminded me of a conversation we had after a gig one night when someone was teasing me about my rather youthful looks and gentle demeanour. She pulled up short by a mate of mine who said, of course he doesn't age. Doesn't work. He plays for a living. Now, I've always thought that was a pretty profound observation spoken in jest, and all these years later, I wonder what Stuart would have made of it. He also took me back to a much earlier time when my poor dad would arrive home after a hard day's bricklaying and get jumped on and scragged to the ground as soon as dinner was finished. It's good to remember things like that. Thanks, Life Matters.
Well, thanks, Glenn. And Glenn was referring to our interview last week with Dr. Stuart Brown, who's made a lifelong study of play and how it's essential for adults as well as children. And it brought back quite a few memories for many of our listeners on the importance of play. And Judith recently watched her daughters play in the creek, and she says, one of the most powerful memories I have of is of my very sophisticated and well-travelled older daughter, who just returned from working in Europe, and her younger sister, who just finished high school, diving into the rain-swollen waters of one of our creeks, fully clothed and being swept downstream. Simple joy of being able to be completely crazy. The newish boyfriend, who'd only really seen my daughter as responsible and studious, was somewhat perplexed.
Indeed. And on our website, Lois also told us of watching a group of young people playing and what she saw. I witnessed a group of young people playing in a large pool of water at a camping site one hot summer's day. Some became water-dwelling people, mermaids and otters, and others earthlings. My attention and interest were held by observing what they were learning. A lot about exercising their imagination, sequencing ideas, communicating, problem-solving, relating to others, working as a group, and understanding and responding to differences within the group so that each one had a satisfying play experience.
Last Thursday, we spoke to Dr. Kathy Kesselman about lifting the secrecy on her own experience of childhood abuse in the hope of helping adult survivors. And this interview caught one of our callers a bit by surprise.
G'day. I just want to let you know that I listened to the podcast of Kathy Kesselman, and I found myself all teary when listening to how each of Kathy's children wanted to speak at the launch of her book. I'm a 52-year-old bloke and getting teary like that was embarrassing, kind of. But her comments about the ignorance of many, but thankfully not all, psychologists in how to help an adult who experienced abuse as a child, that certainly rings true in my experience as well. So thank you for sharing that with the world. Bye.
And Stephanie also found writing about her experiences helped her. I found writing a good way of releasing and transforming the experience into something I could get a grasp on. I had some success with writing and performing my work about child abuse that turned the experience into something I could reshape and objectify. So, to a large extent, it doesn't bother me so much now because I've turned it into a piece of art which belongs to others as well as to me. Try writing it out and redraft as much as you need to. This helps.
And finally, we heard from parenting educator and writer Michael Gross about the difficulties in trying to measure how your children are going, whether they're thriving. Lisa sent us her thoughts. I very much agree that we have to let our children have their ups and downs in life. Coping with the small stuff when they're young helps teach them to cope with the bigger stuff that will come later on in life. I think it's important that we as parents are there to support our children, but not take over their problems. We can help by listening to them, empowering them, working with them to find some coping strategies. For me, modelling and how and what we say is essential. If we want our children to respect us, then we need to show that we respect them. Put ourselves in their shoes and think about how we would react if our partner spoke to us the way we speak to our children.
And we had a lot of response to that interview with Michael Gross, and I just refer people to our website where you can read the letter of the week, which comes from Caroline. It's about her experience of pocket money and her children. It's really well worth reading, and you can just find it on the Life Matters website. So thanks, Jane.
Thank you, Amanda. And we'd always love to hear from you in response to anything you've heard on the program. It was lovely to get some instant feedback before. You can get in touch on our listener line on 02833 1430. Leave a comment or send us an email at abc.net.au/rn/lifematters.